Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, thanks for downloading this podcast. If you want to listen live, be sure to download the iHeartRadio app and search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
It's In This League.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Come again.
With Scott Bogman and Chris Welsh.
Can't wait.
What does that do? Does that blow your mind?
That just happened.
Welcome into In This League on the Sports Grid. Get on the grid. It's your hour show on Friday here, so you know it's me, Scott Bogman, at Bogman Sports. And for the foreseeable future, I'm going to have my buddy Nick Allen join me on this show on Friday. You can follow him on the Twitter at CFB Winning Edge. You can hear me and him and our friend Xavier Trish go over college football and all that kind of good stuff on the CFB Winning Edge podcast, which drops every Thursday, especially when I remember to post it. So that goes up. And Nick, I mean, you know, the off season seems even longer now that we have no sports at all. Are you with me on that? Is this really crawling this year, or does it seem normal right now because you're kind of more college football centric than anything else?
Yeah, it's kind of weird. It's one of those things where sometimes it feels fast, sometimes it feels slow. I've talked before on other shows, if any of our listeners have heard, I've lived a lot of different places, and there was a six-month period I lived in Puerto Rico, and it felt like we were there for like a week and a year at the same time, because every day just felt exactly the same. The weather was exactly the same. The sun rose at the same time, it set at the same time. So it's kind of like that for me right now, if it makes sense. So sometimes I'll look up and think like, oh my God, I can't believe it's April already. And then sometimes I'll think like, man, it's only April.
Only April? Right.
Right. Yeah.
And you know what? I think in quarantine, like, when we're doing this quarantine and social distancing, you and me work from home so much, you know, it's kind of like we're going to be fine with this. You start to realize how much you actually do leave the house when this stuff creeps up on you. So especially me, I mean, people think I'm a shut-in, and I kind of considered myself a shut-in a little bit. But I left my house for the first time in like 3 or 4 days today, and I was like, oh my God, this feels good. And I was only out for like 20, 30 minutes. So it just felt good to like get in my car and drive a little bit today. So, and I'm going to be doing more of it over the weekend. But we are going to continue with what we left off with last week. We were kind of going by the positional ranks that you did, along with our friends John Lobb and Justin Heisey over at Fantrax. And this article. So we didn't get to wide receivers last week, so we're going to start there, and then I have some tight end questions as well. But I do have kind of an overarching question to start you off with here, Nick. And is it, you know, we see impact freshmen every single year in college football. It just always happens. But as far as ranking them for this season, are they going to be way lower on list overall because of the lack of spring games and the potential lack of, you know, summer camps and all of that good stuff?
I think so. I think in years past, I mean, we would hear names sort of trickle out during stories and spring practice, and like, oh, you know, last year at Texas, everybody was sort of raving about Jordan Whittington, right? Yeah. They were super excited about the things he was doing in early practice sessions, and of course before he got hurt. But you know, you would hear about how he was going to contribute as both a running back and a receiver. They were going to do all these interesting, fun things with him, and people really got high on him, you know, coming into the year. And that's the first example that comes to mind, but I feel like there's probably a handful every year. And we're not really going to get that. I mean, I heard a little bit of that with South Carolina. Marshawn Lloyd was probably, you know, had some similar things said about him, less about the catching out of the backfield, doing different things, but just as a running back, and he's going to have a job, you know, have an opportunity to come in and win a job to become the primary ball carrier. But really, there weren't very many others that we had an opportunity to hear those sort of things about. So I think you're absolutely right that just because of the, more than anything, the lack of news for me, that's just sort of how I keep an eye on freshmen during, you know, spring practice, summer, and things like that. And I think that's sort of how the ball gets rolling, where people get excited about those kind of guys in draft season. So I think you're absolutely right that the less we hear of those things and the fewer opportunities those guys have to impress coaches, impress teammates, and somebody catches a quote or whatever as a result, I think absolutely we're going to see less of those freshmen early on, and especially we're going to see less of them in the news, in the headlines, that sort of thing.
What about first-year starters? And I'm not talking about transfers, because we know, like, when a guy transfers, it's usually to take a job. So, you know, Derek King transferring, he's not competing. I mean, Anthony Brown, who we talked about on CFP Winning Edge, transferring to Oregon, probably the closest thing to a non-starter transfer that we have. But I think that most guys transferring in kind of have a job. But what about first-year starters because of the lack of a spring practice and potentially summer practices and stuff? Are they going to end up being in that same vein?
Yeah. So on Brown specifically, it's been about 24 hours since we spoke about him yesterday. And I think I'm starting to come around more toward him specifically, probably has more of a, you know, instead of a 50-50 shot, it's probably leaning more towards, you know, 60-40 of winning that job, or maybe even 70-30. I'm starting to find myself going more and more in that direction. But first-year starters, I think it's, in some ways, I think it's a case-by-case. It's a good question. It's a hard one to answer, because there are some jobs where a guy's been sort of groomed for it, and he's going to step in, and you're pretty sure he's going to be the guy. Spencer Rattler, we talked about last week, seems to maybe fit that mold. It would be surprising to an awful lot of people if he's not the starter this fall and sort of wins that job early in spring camp. So I think you've got those as a situation, and you've got chances where situations where there's sort of a position battle that the guy with the edge and experience, or, you know, especially if there's a staff that's been together for a while, same offensive coordinator, that sort of thing, and you've got like a redshirt freshman or sophomore or somebody that's been in the system a year or two, is going to have maybe a bigger advantage over somebody coming in from the outside, a transfer or a true freshman. Alabama, I think, is a situation like that. I mean, Mac Jones, we got to see him a bit last year, and his overall numbers were quite good. And I think a lot of people are really, you know, expecting him to have the inside track to that job. I thought that the five-star true freshman, Bryce Young, probably had a better than 50% chance of winning that job outright and probably taking hold of it, you know, in week four or five. That was sort of my starting point. And I think because of the lack of spring practice, Jones now has a better chance of holding off Young, because, you know, we're not going to get to see him for 15 practices, or, you know, Nick Saban and Steve Sarkisian, that coaching staff's not going to get to see him for 15 practice and sort of wow at the you know, just raw skills, raw talent that he's got. They're probably going to err on the side of caution and think like, okay, we know Mac Jones a little bit better. We've seen him on Saturdays. We've seen how he reacts in game situations. And so I think you're going to see somebody like that get maybe a longer leash or a, you know, have a bigger edge in a competition like that, in some of those, you know, position battle situations.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think the what you initially said, that the case by case is really a good way to put it. And you laid out probably the most popular one in Alabama between Young and Mac Jones there at Bama. So it just makes more sense that he would start for longer. So I'm absolutely with you on that. Now, getting into these wide receiver rankings, and these are a lot of fun to look at. Like I said, they're on FantraxHQ.com, where our guy John Lobb, coordinated all the rankings there, and he has the aggregated list for everyone. Great list, of course, and they're tough to rank. In this season, there's really no consensus number one. In fact, there are five rankers and four different wide receivers at number one. You actually you and Zach Hall have the same guy, Rondale Moore, at one. Jamar Chase was one from Bainbridge. Sage Surratt, excuse me, was one from Heisey, and Rashad Bateman is Lobb's number one. Why is Rondale Moore ahead of those guys for you? And just to be clear, you've got Chase at two, Bateman at three, and Surratt at four. So you have all those guys in order. All the number ones are two, three, and four for you. But Moore is your number one. Explain Rondale Moore being number one overall at wide receiver for us.
I think Rondale Moore is just a complete unicorn. I mean, I think his skill set is just so different than just about anybody else in college football. And I was, just like everybody, I mean, so, so incredibly impressed with him as a true freshman. And just the partly his skills, but also he's in a perfect system. With Jeff Brohm does a great job of getting the ball to his primary playmakers, and you know, from game one of his true freshman season, Brohm just absolutely fed Moore until, you know, that it was more first, second, third, just, you know, as far as options go. And I know that he had the hamstring injury last year. Of course, we only saw four games of him last year, and that was a definite bummer, but everything that I've heard is that hamstring is not going to be an issue in 2020. He's completely healthy. We've seen some, you know, videos he's posted of doing backflips and all kinds of crazy stuff. So he's looking good. And the only thing, and I've heard this from a couple of people in response to my rankings, is they're a little bit concerned that David Bell, who's kind of a Rondale Moore type guy in some ways, when Moore went down last year, Bell sort of stepped up and became that guy that would get the ball early and often in a variety of ways. People are a little bit concerned that Bell's going to eat into Moore's overall production. And I think it's a good argument. And I don't know that I necessarily expect Moore to put up the numbers he put up as a true freshman when he was pretty much the only option. But I do think that Moore is going to be closer to those numbers and will have an opportunity to, establish himself as the guy, the number one option, and Bell is a sort of a complimentary piece. And so I'm pretty confident that Rondale Moore is going to be just put in a position to succeed. I think he's going to stay healthy. I think he's going to get the ball a lot in the running game again, like we saw as a true freshman. I think he's going to be targeted early and often at a much higher rate than Bell. But it is, of course, nice to have Bell as a secondary option. And in some ways, that could help Moore because, you know, defenses won't be able to key on him as much because they know there's another weapon on the other side. So I think Moore just personally is probably my favorite player in college football. I mean, I just enjoy watching him play. And
those are big words. I mean, your yeah, favorite player. I mean, you analyze 11,000 of these dudes. And he's your favorite guy. I mean, that's high praise from you, for sure.
It is. And so he's a clear number one for me, but there's not a huge gap between he and really that top five. I put Devonta Smith in that group as well. He's an incredible player. And I think any of those five, really, I mean, the top seven guys are pretty close in my opinion. So Ja'Marr Chase, I mean, I wouldn't argue with anybody that put him number one. I mean, he had an incredible year last year. It worries me a little that Joe Burrow is not going to be throwing the ball to him this year, but, you know, we saw what he can do, and I think that he's going to put up great numbers. And Bateman, you know, similarly was very, very impressive, and he did it with another big-time guy on the other side, Tyler Johnson. Now, Johnson's gone, so in one instance, you think, okay, Bateman's now going to get an even bigger target share. I mean, like we saw Johnson get in 2018, perhaps those are the numbers we could think of for Bateman. But then on the other hand, you think, okay, well, you know, did Tyler Johnson create some space for Bateman to maybe do more than he could have done as a you know, or more than we might have expected him to do. So it's, you know, all these guys, there's a lot of different moving pieces. There's a lot of things to keep in mind. But yeah, Moore is just my absolute favorite.
And so now, you traded Moore to me, didn't you?
I did last year in my league. And I was pretty sure that, cause in season hamstrings are an issue. And if somebody's got a hamstring, I am pretty willing to cut and run quickly, because even if a guy can get back on the field, hamstrings just, they never feel 100% until they are 100%. So, I was in a, you know, playoff race and saw an opportunity to, pick up some, key pieces. And so, yeah, I unloaded Moore and, I feel bad about it. We'll have to work out a way to maybe get him back this year.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm going to need another quarterback in that league for sure, because I think Sam Ehlinger is my only guy. I have McCaffrey, but is McCaffrey going to start at Michigan?
So I hear Joe Milton's got sort of the inside track. I think it's pretty close to even, but anything I'm reading and anything I'm hearing, Milton's mentioned first, which was a little bit of a surprise to me. I would have thought McCaffrey would have the inside track, but that's one I'm going to have to dive into a little bit more. I'm not sure, but my initial thought, just based on the way it's been phrased or put out there, seems that Milton might have the slight edge going in.
I don't like hearing that, but you know, that's probably correct. As far as it goes right now, and I still regret not trading for Devin Duvernay last year. I mean, Devin Duvernay didn't do anything.
Could have had it for a song.
Yeah, seriously. I literally could have had him for, like, I can't even remember what you were offering, like a tight end or somebody. So, oh God, just, that's 2020 vision, but, you know, it's the way it goes. But like I said, we're going to be here for the next hour. I got more wide receiver questions for Nick, of course. I got some attached to some of his quarterback rankings, which I think are interesting questions. Tight ends are always the hardest position to suss out in college fantasy as well. So I'm going to have some questions for him on those. And look, guys, you know, nothing going on right now. You're going to appreciate all the fantasy sports you could possibly play when we get sports back. So definitely be listening to this and sticking with us for the college fantasy football season. Remember, you can follow us on Twitter at Bogman Sports, at CFB Winning Edge. We'll be right back after this break with more CFF talk on the Sports Grid.
Are you ready for the nation's first and only free 24-hour network dedicated to you, the betting and fantasy sports enthusiast? Sports Grid will provide you with real-time content, statistics, and gaming intelligence unlike anything you've ever seen before. Located both in the heart of New York City and inside the FanDuel Sportsbook at the Meadowlands, Sports Grid is live 18 hours a day, here to serve you, the fanatic. This is Sports Grid. Get on the grid.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. I'm still on my own journey, but I want to be transparent with you, because as I was posting all the highlights of my life on social media, I was breaking down. And too many people fall victim to the picture-perfect image of the high life, so I created a space to discuss the good and the bad. We can laugh, man. We gonna learn, and most of all, I hope to inspire you to go on this journey with me to better mental health. This is going to be your church, your turn up, and everything in between. So join me on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, a safe space for every kind of person. Listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I generally come in at least 15 minutes late. I use the side door, and after that, I just sort of space out for about an hour.
Space out?
I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Would you be a good sport and indulge us and just tell us a little more?
Let me tell you something about
In This League.
Welcome back. It's In This League on the Sports Grid. Get on the grid. I'm your host, Scott Bogman. Follow me on the Twitter at Bogman Sports. I'm joined by my friend Nick Allen. You can follow him on the Twitter at CFB Winning Edge. Nick, tell everybody about CFB Winning Edge and what you guys got going on over there.
Yeah, so we're entering our third season at CFB Winning Edge. We do individual player ratings that we've gone through and take their recruiting ratings that the experts have put together for us, and we adjust those for experience and career production. Gives us an overall what we call like a video game rating, like a Madden rating for each player on a very similar scale. Helps us to build ratings for individual units, build those up into team strength ratings. We incorporate a wide variety of numbers, head coach ratings and offensive defensive coordinator ratings, all that sort of stuff. Gives us an overall sense of team strength for each team, and then we're able to project point spreads and win totals and all that kind of good stuff. So it's a wealth of information. We've got team profiles with full rosters and all that information for all 130 teams available to our patrons at patreon.com/CFBWinningEdge.
Now, your CFF rankings are up there. And, of course, they're early and subject to change and stuff like that. I saw so many guys listed in each position. You didn't rank all the way down to the very bottom yet, did you?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. So the way we do everything, because we've got ratings for every player already, and we do have databases in our team profiles where they're organized by position already. So all the players are already there. So I do it a little bit differently than a lot of people. I don't even look this first go round. I didn't even look at fantasy points. I did based on our ratings, but then based more focusing in on what I call our production points. So those are, you know, big games that guys have had. So these are weighted toward guys that are most likely to have, those huge games. They might be maybe boom or bust type guys, but they're more likely to give you a boom than somebody that's a little bit more consistent, if that makes sense. But yeah, so we've got the database with all the players already in there. It's pretty easy for me to go through and just sort of sort and you know, point and click and pull guys up based on little, you know, equations I put in there based, you know, try to do production points per game, per start, all that sort of stuff. So it's pretty easy for me to do all of them as a starter.
If you say so. I mean, there's over 1,000 wide receivers ranked. I don't know about all the other positions, but there's thousands and thousands of players ranked in that. If you say it's easy, I'll believe you, but I also know your tediousness and your fastidiousness as far as all that stuff goes. You are paying attention to detail on everything. So ranking over 1,000 wide receivers, like, I don't know if I rank 1,000 wide receivers between both college and pros. So
easy enough. How about that? I'll say it's easy enough.
Okay. Yeah. I don't really believe you that it's easy, because if it's easy, people would rank 1,000 wide receivers. You're the only one crazy enough I know to do that so far. But let's talk about out of the thousands and still in this top 12 here. Let's go back to this, because you have Sha'Carius Atwell from Louisville as your number six. The next highest ranking on him is 10. Bainbridge and Lobb don't have him in their top 12. He only had three games of under 15 points in PPR last year. Do you think he's being slept on just a little bit?
If he is right now, he probably won't be for long. I think that for whatever reason, maybe he just wasn't top of mind for a lot of folks last year, but he put up huge numbers. I mean, he caught 70 balls, over 1,200 receiving yards, 12 touchdowns. I mean, he's you know, that's similar production to like a Rondale Moore type guy. I mean, he's a somewhat similar player. And Scott Satterfield, we saw at Appalachian State. I mean, he's also the kind of guy where, you know, he sees a weapon and he's going to feed that guy. And so between Javian Hawkins, the running back, and Tutu Atwell, those guys got the ball often and pretty much all the time. Atwell put up 13 production points. So, you know, based on, you can, for the most part, you can get a maximum of 2 points per game. And it's, you know, pretty rare to average 1 point per game and sort of our system. And he did that. So he's a guy that you can count on week in, week out to put up big numbers. And for whatever reason, maybe, you know, he wasn't top of mind for some of the guys, but I think he's probably going to climb. I would be very surprised if those guys continue to leave him off the top 10 lists.
Yeah. I mean, just a great season overall from him last year, and you know, a lot returning. Mikael Cunningham is coming back. Pass is still on the roster there, like you mentioned. Hawkins and Hall, is Hall transferring in from? Am I getting him mixed up with someone? Wasn't there a Hall at ECU?
Hussein Hall, I think.
Okay,
yeah. I'm not sure if there's a relation there.
Okay,
but,
yeah. The name's close. That's why the name's close, and I'm simple. So that's kind of why we have that. But
you don't have 11,000 guys just cataloged in your brain, is that?
No. Mine is filled with, you know, I've got baseball players, basketball players, and a lot of food clogged in there as well. So, but yeah, I mean, last year going into the season, Des Fitzpatrick. Yeah. It's all. See, I mean, you watched. Did you even watch the Super Bowl live, Nick?
I caught the last 6 minutes or so.
Okay. So. Well, that was when it was getting good anyway. So I guess right. that's when you watch it. But, I mean, you pour so much into college football that it's tough to really watch anything else. So very understandable, and that's why I have you on, because you're the go-to guy on these questions. Now, you were solo on Warren Jackson from Colorado State and Renard Bell from Washington State. Can you sell us on these guys as far as being in the top 10 or top 12, excuse me?
I think so. I think that first and foremost for Warren Jackson, people are probably overcorrecting a little bit for the coaching change. I think that, you know, Steve Adazio, we know what he did at Boston College. We know he fed the running back. He had AJ Dillon. He had similar, you know, guys that were the focus of the offense, and you know, they didn't put up huge passing numbers. Receivers weren't particularly great in that system from, you know, of course, a fantasy standpoint. But one thing that I think about for Steve Adazio specifically is he did that at Boston College, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's who he is and that's always who he's going to be. I think he did a pretty good job.
I don't want to cut you off, but I think that playing to your strengths might make Warren Jackson even more valuable, right? If that's what he was doing at Boston College, if he's playing to his strengths at Colorado State, he's going to throw the ball a lot, right?
Well, I'm not sure if he's going to just throw the ball a lot, but I think you're absolutely right that he will play to his strengths. And he's going to look over there and he's going to see Warren Jackson, who's what, you know, 6'6", 220 something, you know, and just a matchup nightmare, who had a huge season last year. He missed two games and still went over 1,000 yards, 8 touchdowns, 77 catches. So he's going to, Steve Adazio, I think, is going to say, all right, I've got a unique weapon. A.J. Dillon was a unique weapon, right? Just played a different position. Warren Jackson is a unique weapon, and it's not like he's the only one. I mean, Nate Craig Myers was a five-star guy early in his high school career. They've got an all-conference tight end. They've got another starter at wide receiver, Dante Wright. So it's not like you can just focus on Jackson either. But I do think that Adazio is going to look, and he's going to say, all right, I've got an experienced offense. You know, Patrick O'Brien at quarterback. got a full year almost of playing time last year. And he's going to say these guys were successful offensively. You know, obviously defensively is a different story, but let's let them do what they do well. So I think people are maybe overcorrecting for Addazio and just thinking a little too hard about what Boston College was, because I think that he's going to put a system in place. He hired the offensive coordinator from Ball State, who did some good things there, put the ball in the air a lot. So I think that Warren Jackson, I'm going to trust his track record and the fact that he is sort of a special matchup issue in the Mountain West. I think Addazio is going to find ways to get him the ball. He might not put up as big a numbers, but I think, you know, top 10, top 12 receiver, he's earned it. And I'm a big enough believer that Addazio will put him in a position to be successful, that we're not going to see a huge drop off. So for you asked about Bell. Was that the?
Yeah, Renard Bell from Washington Renard. State. Yeah.
So for him, it's
this one's more difficult. I don't mean to cut you off again. I feel like this one is more a harder sell because you have a new coach, a new quarterback coming in, and Tay Martin, also a senior on this team, can take catches away. But you know, watching Hawaii, they kind of tend to focus in on one or two wide receivers, and they can both be unbelievably successful. So I like this ranking.
Well, so this was a little bit out of the box. It was not quite exactly what I was describing before, where I was going through and based on a bunch of you know, formulas and our own ratings. This was more
a gut almost move.
It was more of a gut move, and it was more of a, I want to make sure Washington State is featured here somewhere. I've paid a lot of attention to Nick Rolovich in the past and Hawaii in the past, and know that the even though it's a new head coach and it is a different system, it's similar in a lot of ways where they're going to put the ball in the air a lot. They've got Max Borgi. I do expect Nick Rolovich to make better use of him, I think, than Mike Leach did, especially in the running game. But I was looking at the guys who were on hand, and Washington State lost a lot of receivers, but you know somebody is going to step up and put up big numbers. And chances are, you know, it's going to be multiple guys. I mean, over the years at Hawaii, there were usually two guys that you could pretty much count on to be solid contributors week to week. Bell's a returning starter. Tay Martin's a returning starter. There were other guys in consideration. Calvin Jackson is a senior who actually redshirted last year and is coming back. He's been, you know, he's played in 17 games. Jameer Calvin's played in 26 games. He was injured last year. And then Travell Harris is also back. So I think there's a big group of somebody who, you know, two of those guys could emerge. And I was pretty sure, for me, it was going to come down to either Bell or Martin. And Bell just reminds me a little bit more of those Hawaii receivers, the Cedric Bird type guy. He's 5'8", 160. You know, he's a shifty guy, can play in the slot. And those are the guys that do a lot of damage in the run and shoot with their option routes and go over the middle. They can go deep on a vertical and get matchups that work well. So Tay Martin is a bigger receiver, 6'3", and you know that certainly has its advantages. But
touchdown upside for sure.
Yeah, but just thinking back in this, maybe I'm opposite of what I said about Addazio. Maybe I'm colored a little bit too much by the coaching change here and thinking back to Hawaii and Nick Rolovich.
We do call Nick a secret Hawaii fan. So,
oh, it's not that much of a secret.
Right.
but yeah, I mean, he just reminds me a little bit more of that type of player. And he did get more, he didn't put up as big of receiving yardage numbers as Martin did last year, but he was targeted more. So I think in a PPR league, I see that maybe being something that he can carry over to where he's going to be targeted a little bit more. Martin might put up bigger, you know, yardage numbers. He might be a little bit more of a red zone guy, even though Bell did catch six touchdowns and Martin had four. But Bell had you know, 53 catches last year, and that's 10 more than Martin did. So I feel like he's a guy that's going to get a lot of targets, might not, you know, have as much explosive ability, but I think he's going to be a very good option targeted early and often, and it could be any one of these guys, but I felt like Bell maybe had the slightly best shot, and I wanted to make sure one of those Washington State guys was mentioned.
Now, a guy that doesn't have to be in your top 12 here, and we've only got about 2 minutes left here, but is there a guy or two that makes you nervous because of a new either head coach or a quarterback or anything like that that you've ranked fairly high?
Let's see. So, not... Huh.
I finally stumped Nick. I got him on something.
So I mean, the first, I guess, that comes to mind is Max Borgie or Borgie, because I did put him in the top 12. I think he's very talented, put up good numbers as a receiver out of the backfield, but Hawaii really didn't throw to the running back very much, at least the last 2 years when they moved to the run and shoot. Rolovich isn't always tied to the run and shoot. I mean, he was offensive coordinator at Nevada, ran the pistol under Chris Ault. So he's got a background where they can do different things. In his first couple of years at Hawaii, they weren't the run and shoot. They were more of a pistol base. They did run the ball a lot more. He's one of those guys that's not going to be just completely tied to his system. He's not Mike Leach, who's going to say, okay, we're running the air raid, nothing but the air raid forever and always. Rolovich is going to look and say, okay, I've got this weapon at running back. I need to get him the ball. So on the one hand, I'm sort of a little bit worried, because that, you know, if he does that, that sort of might hurt my Bell assessment.
Or yeah, the I got you.
So I'm kind of stuck between sort of the upside of both and then the trade-off as to what could happen to the other guy. So,
and they could both be successful, right? And it wouldn't be that surprising. But we do have to hit a break here. We're going to take a break. I'm going to ask Nick probably my favorite question that I've asked him in this show, and I'm really curious to hear the answer here. So stick with us on the Sports Grid. It's ITL. We'll be right back after this break.
Want to light the lamp on DraftKings and FanDuel this NHL DFS season? Then join DailyRoto.com and learn from the best daily fantasy sports players. Get updated fantasy hockey projections for NHL DFS, line combinations, and build stacks for tournaments in the DailyRoto NHL DFS lineup optimizer. If you are playing daily fantasy hockey without using DailyRoto, you are doing it wrong. Enter the promo code ACTION for a 10% discount. That's promo code ACTION for a 10% discount.
Have you written a book and need some insight into what comes next?
Or are you passionate about cooking and want to know how to make it your career?
Or maybe you just want to hear insider stories about the entertainment industry. Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef. And on our podcast, Two Guys from Hollywood, we bring our expertise to the table with, of course, delicious cocktails and all kinds of recipes for you to try at home.
So grab a drink and join us. We've got a wide range of celebrity guests and Hollywood insiders to discuss pop culture, publishing, and entertainment. And we'll provide you with an unfiltered and sometimes brutally honest show about Hollywood.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
In this league.
I thought we were going to be just friends.
What? Friends listen to
In This League.
In the dark.
Welcome back. You hear Endless Love. You know what that means. This is the last segment of the day. It's me, Scott Bogman. Follow me on the Twitter at Bogman Sports. And check out our Patreon. We got all kinds of stuff going on over at In This League right now. We've got, I just posted NFL dynasty rankings at each position. So those are up. over on ITL. The Welsh and I are updating our baseball ranks for Monday. Obviously, looking more and more like a shortened season, so we got to move some guys up on our list as far as that goes. So those will be available on Monday. I'm doing two live streams a week on Mondays and Thursdays. I am also doing a live stream with the Welsh when we play the Oregon Trail. We've got secret shows over there, over 70 hours of content there. For those of you that are quarantined and bored, you've had enough of Netflix, you've had enough of everything else, time to get some podcasting in. And those are usually fairly evergreen. Most of them are comedy-based and not all sports-based. So if you're getting a little bit tired of sports, which, I mean, I never am, but it's understandable. If you're getting a little bit tired of sports, you know, we have comedy-based stuff over there as well. And I am joined by my friend Nick Allen. And please check out his Patreon over at CFP Winning Edge. If you're a college football fan, if you're going to make any bets this year, you have to get it. Plus, he's going to give you CFF rankings 1 through 8,093 on his wide receivers are all up there. I mean, you got everybody listed, Nick. So it's great content over there, of course. So please check out all of that stuff. But we are talking wide receivers here. One of the harder positions to rank in all of fantasy. I think in all of fantasy, the hardest to rank, in my opinion, is tight ends, which we'll probably talk more at depth about next week as we've gone long on our wide receiver conversation, but it's so great. And this is my favorite question. And these are some tough answers. So, you know, I don't expect you to have firm grip answers here, Nick, but I'm interested in hearing about this. And it's really about wide receivers connected to highly ranked quarterbacks because someone's got to catch the ball for those guys. A lot of these guys are going to make it up. Specifically, two that I have on this list, King and O'Hara, are going to make up with their legs. So a lot of their production is going to come through that. But they're going to have some good you know, receivers as well. So Derek King, let's start with him. He's on 3 of 5 rankers list. Who is going to be his number one target in Miami?
So that's a really tricky question because Miami didn't do a very good job of you know, throwing the football last year, quite honestly. And their top weapon, KJ Osborne, is gone. His the grad transfer from Buffalo, and he's no longer you know, he's out of eligibility. Brevin Jordan, who I was super high on last year as a tight end, the new offensive coordinator, Rhett Lashley, hasn't used, I mean, he did a little bit at SMU last year, so that is good for Brevin Jordan. But thinking back farther back, he didn't incorporate the tight end all that much, and especially at Auburn, you know, they for years have perhaps a missed opportunity getting the tight end more involved in the passing game. So I'm hopeful that Brevin Jordan will get maybe some similar numbers, but I think that his overall target rate might drop a little bit in 2020. So with Jeff Thomas gone, you know, to the NFL early, that leaves Mike Harley really as the most experienced receiver. So I think that you kind of have to start there. He's a senior. He's you know, 11 career starts. He's been in the mix, but he's a smaller guy and hasn't really been featured, you know, real often in his career. So he's coming into a senior year, and you think that, you know, perhaps he's got the inside track to be that guy. But as I'm looking down our depth charts on our team profiles, two names jump out to me who have some experience and were really, really highly rated guys. They've disappointed a little bit in their career so far, but there's perhaps an opportunity, a new guy calling the plays, a new system in place that's going to, you know, put their skill set at better use. So I'm looking at Mark Pope, who's a junior. He's got, you know, 21 games of experience, has only started once, so, you know, hasn't really broken through and become a big-time guy. Had 18 catches last year, showed that, you know, he could stretch the field a little bit, average almost 15 yards a catch. So he's a guy I think will take a step up, and then probably one that I think has the biggest opportunity to sort of come out of nowhere almost is Jeremiah Payton, who was a highly, highly rated recruit in the class of 2019, but only appeared in 4 games, only caught 1 pass. He's a guy that I think is going to, you know, maybe people forgot about it. They saw him as a recruit, got excited about how highly rated he was, but he you know, didn't register much at all in 2019, but I think he could become a big guy in the rotation. Probably should be a starter. Should compete with Pope and D. Wiggins for a starting role. So I think he's a guy that's going to take a big step forward, and I'm sort of excited to see what that looks like this year, and especially for the future. I think he's got a really high ceiling and a nice future ahead for a true freshman that could potentially jump in and get some experience. Michael Redding was their highest rated recruit from a wide receiver standpoint this year, but he did have a wrist injury, was going to miss the spring even before all of this. So that's something to watch. Wrists, you know, we talked hamstrings earlier. Wrists are always a little bit tricky as well,
especially for
exactly. So maybe, you know, I don't have huge expectations, but he's maybe somebody to look for in the future. But I think at the beginning of the year, Mike Harley maybe has the best chance to be the number one receiver. But I think in the long run, Jeremiah Payton is the guy I would want.
And I mean, we got the same question going on here with Mississippi State and KJ Costello, because Costello ranked very high because of Mike Leach, of course. No one doubts that. But it's tough to find a wide receiver for him, because this grouping is, there's good names here. I like Osiris Mitchell, but I don't know. Can you suss that one out for us as well?
So Osiris Mitchell, I think, is pretty clear to start the season as the number one. He's probably the guy that you're going to want first on your list if you're looking for production from Mississippi State. The other two starters I've got penciled in are Austin Williams, who's a junior, has some experience, a little bit of starting experience. Javonta Payton will be a senior. He was a JUCO guy last year, if memory serves. Played in every game, started a couple. So those seem to me to be the guys who are going to start the year in the starting lineup. And then Mike Leach doesn't really use the tight end much, but he inherited a pretty good one in Farad Green. So I am interested to see if he incorporates that. Maybe the guys who are listed as tight ends on the roster might drop a little weight and play more of a true wideout role or slot role, things like that. So that's something to watch when we get to tight ends. But as far as newcomers, Malik Heath is a guy who's already on campus, was a junior college guy, big body, 6'3", 210, and, you know, could potentially emerge. In a situation like this, new head coach, and especially somebody bringing in a new system, I'm going to give a long, hard look to junior college guys. And so he fits that bill. There's another one, Caleb Ducking, who is 6'5", who is a junior college guy already. Or he's not on campus, I don't think, but probably has an opportunity for some early playing time as well. So I would focus my energy on Mitchell first and foremost, but I would certainly do my homework on Heath as well, because I think he's got an opportunity to break into that starting role, and we know that Leach, you know, they spread the ball around a good bit, so there's an opportunity for somebody to step up and become it, if not a number one, a solid number two guy, and I think Heath might have that potential.
What about a number one target for Asher O'Hara at Middle Tennessee? Obviously, once again, did a lot of damage with his legs, but he really spread it out between three guys last season: Jimmy Marshall, Jaron Pierce, and Ty Lee, who is now gone. Who do we think is going to step up for the Blue Raiders here?
That's a good question, and I really do like Asher O'Hara, and I was kicking myself after we hung up yesterday, because we were doing a Conference USA look ahead, and I didn't even get to talk about him. But I really, really like O'Hara, and I'm really high on him. Pierce and Marshall are returning starters, so those are the guys that you're going to look at first. And Pierce got the biggest work share, but not by a huge margin. Marshall scored six touchdowns, and Marshall, you know, they're very different receivers. Marshall is the big body, 6'5", 225. Pierce is the little guy, 5'10", 170. So it's a little bit of a guessing game, because I'm always, you know, thinking about the big guy in the red zone. So that gives me, you know, hope that you're going to get more touchdowns. But Tony Franklin's the offensive coordinator there. He's a longtime air raid guy, does some different things, runs the ball a good bit more now at Middle Tennessee than he did in previous stops. But they like to get the little guys involved and target them a lot. So it's a little bit of a trade-off. If I were to guess at this point, and haven't gotten around to our full projections just yet, but I would assume that Pierce is going to be targeted more, but Marshall is going to have the opportunity for more big plays and more touchdowns. So it's kind of a trade-off as to, you know, if you think Marshall's going to actually be able to stretch a defense and put up, you know, enough of those big scoring plays, big yardage plays to make him more valuable than somebody that's going to probably see the you know, be the primary target. And somebody that we shouldn't forget about, Zach Dobson was injured late last year.
So
he was only at, only played in 8 games and you know, didn't put up huge numbers, but he is somebody that I think has the potential. He's another smaller guy, so that could potentially eat into to Pierce as well. So it's a really good question. That's going to be a difficult situation, and they did bring in 2 Power 5 transfers at running back, and I expect Middle Tennessee to actually run the ball even more because they got Martell Petway and Amir Rasul from West Virginia and Florida State respectively, and expect them to be pretty run heavy. But if you were asking me if I want one of these guys, who's it going to be, I might have to side with the Marshall. Seems like the highest ceiling.
Because of the touchdown upside for sure. And exactly. Once again, you know, we're looking for number one targets here, but Asher O'Hara, over 1,000 rushing yards last year. And that's where we really expect him to butter his bread and make his money, is in the running game. The last team that I have to ask you about here is Iowa State with Brock Purdy and his targets, because Deshante Jones, LaMichael Petway, who are the leaders as far as receiving receptions go last year, 76 for Jones, 55 for Petway. They're both gone. They were seniors last year. Tariq Milton, who had a great year, 35 catches for 722 yards and 3 scores, is coming back, but everybody's got Purdy ranked on this list. He is a highly ranked dude, I think, everybody. I'm not looking directly at it now, but I know he's a very popular guy because he threw for almost 4,000 yards last year. 4,000 yards and 27 scores, and he ran for 8 touchdowns as well. So he is, I mean, Rial Mitchell was on television, but Brock Purdy is the dude. So
well, and Mitchell transferred. So.
Did he really? Okay, I didn't see that because it's still listed on Fantrax at Iowa State. So, but yeah, I mean, Purdy is the guy here for sure, and that is why Rial Mitchell transferred, because he knows he's not going to overtake a guy like Purdy. So, who do you have as the number one target there? Is it Milton, and are you looking to draft him?
So, from just pure targets, you might want to look at the tight end. I mean, Charlie Kohler,
great year,
51. Too. Yeah, had 51 catches last year and led the team in touchdowns. So they've got tight ends. I mean, you know, Chase Allen was also an all Big 12 kind of guy, and then they moved a quarterback to tight end before the spring. Easton Dean, who the head coach Matt Campbell said has the potential to be the best tight end he's ever had. So that's a name to file away for tight ends. They're going to feature those guys a lot. But from a wide receiver standpoint, I think you're right. I think Tariq Milton is probably going to be the number one wide out. The only thing that concerns me a little bit, Iowa State has had the big wide out has done very well for them. I mean, Hakeem Butler a couple of years ago, Michael Petway was that guy, 6'3", last year. Deshante Jones was only 5'10", so, you know, not a huge guy, and he certainly got plenty of work. But I think, you know, if you're looking for maybe an under the radar kind of guy who would fit that just a vertical threat, you know, big body guy, Sean Shaw is perhaps has the inside track to that spot. He's 6'6". You know, didn't get a ton of work last year, but he did score 5 touchdowns. 5 of his 15 catches went for scores. So I think he's probably got the first shot to to take over that role. But Milton is certainly the safer bet. And then if I'm really looking down the list, Joseph Skates is a 6'3 wideout who's the highest rated from a 247 sports perspective coming out of high school. So he's somebody that hasn't done very much, but, you know, potential, I think, is there to maybe take a bigger step forward in 2020 and beyond.
All right. Well, that is going to wrap it up for today. I hope you guys enjoyed that. And I hope you guys are loving the college fantasy football talk. And let me know. Hit me up on Twitter at Bogman Sports. Check out all of Nick's work. It's excellent. And like I said, the dude pays attention to detail, as you've heard him talk today. At CFB Winning Edge on the Twitter and CFB or patreon.com/CFB Winning Edge for his Patreon as well. And we'll be back next Friday to talk more CFF. If you guys have any questions, you can throw them to me on Twitter or scottbogman@gmail.com as well. And we will see you guys then. Take it easy, everybody.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.